Before I begin, I'm going to say the set-aside prayer. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your spiritual truth. God, help me carry your message today. Amen. Okay, today, last Saturday, if you weren't here, I did a meeting on sponsorship. I'm going to put it up on the site today, experiencethebigbook.org. And today we finally are getting to two wives. It's taken us 2 years to start at the first page to get to two wives. So if you're interested in reviewing the whole book up to this point, you can go on November 17 on the site on Saturday and go through the whole thing. We've covered steps we took, carry the message, 12 and 12, drop the rock. In addition, today we're on two wives, which the first few years I didn't do. And Mark G said to me, why don't you do two wives? And those, I did vision for you. I decided that was okay, but I didn't think we needed to do two wives and family afterwards and two employers, because you know, I have alcoholism. And Joe and Charlie said, well, you know, they didn't cover it, so I didn't need to cover it. And then I said, you know what? It's in the book. And I'm going to cover it. I started doing it the last, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years. And I've learned more, really, from two wives, especially in family afterwards, and on the principles, the spiritual principles that we practice. These chapters are powerful. They're called the lost chapters because they're not focused a lot, but there's so much information in them. And a lot of people don't like two wives because Bill W. wrote it, and because Bill W. wrote it, some people won't read it. Sounds like alcoholism. The reason I think he wrote it was, one, he knew a lot of wives, but two, it's really about an alcoholic. It's really about alcoholics and what we look like and how we affect people. And he took this information and he put it together, and it's very, very powerful. And it says, with few exceptions, our book thus far has spoken of men, but what we have said applies quite as much to women. Our activities in behalf of women who drink are on the increase. There's every evidence that women regain their health as readily as men if they try our suggestions. Now remember, they had one woman who joined AA when the book got published, but she joined after it went to the printers. So then they had to change it, 100 men and women. And I don't know if there's any study on how many men versus women alcoholics, but I don't think there's a big difference. The only thing I've noticed in my medical practice is that women get liver disease, seem to get liver failure quicker. They seem to get problems quicker than men. It says, try our suggestions. Well, what about that? And I wrote, if you try the suggestions, what result do you get? If you don't try AA suggestions, what is your result? Isn't that the question they're really asking you? How's your life going? Do you want to try our suggested program of recovery or not? How's your program of recovery working? If it's not working for you, we suggest you do this one. They don't suggest that you, whether you do it or not, they're just suggesting this is the program of recovery. And so I wrote, you know, if you have a parachute, it suggested you pull the cord, right? And so are you taking the actions? And then I wrote this thing. This chapter is really about how we hurt others, those we love, and hurt ourselves, and how we affected people, and then their behavior and how their behavior changed. And this chapter was really the beginning of Al-Anon, which has really helped so many people. For every man who drinks, others are involved. Harms, we've harmed people. The wife who trembles in fear of us, of the next debauch. Debauch isn't good, by the way, in case you don't know. The mother and father who see their son wasting away. We've harmed a lot of people, right? And among us are wives, relatives, and friends whose problem has been solved, as well as some who've not yet found the happy solution. And so here they're saying that they're people who are non-alcoholics who have their spiritual malady solved by working the steps. Remember, this was written, the first, it says, carry this message to others, especially alcoholics. And the principles in this book work for everyone. They're the spiritual principles of the Bible that God gave us, but and they'll work for others. So, and so that when we read to working with others, it says, well, if the alcoholic doesn't want it, make sure you go to his family and talk to them and let them have this information. We want the wives of Alcoholics Anonymous to address the wives of men who drink too much. What they say will affect, will apply to nearly everyone bound by ties of blood or affection to an alcoholic. And then what is our main problem? Whose problem has been solved? Anybody remember what our main, we only have one problem in AA. Conscious separation from God. And we consciously separate from God where? In our head. And we create this world where we're running the show. How does it work? Not very good. So the steps are how I go from conscious separation to conscious contact and stay connected. And 10 and 11, like Stu said, is how we do that every day. Because if I'm consciously in contact with God, then like Jackie said, I have a power that'll give me choice over alcohol and also help me live a life of joy and peace. As wives of AA, we would like you to feel that we understand this, perhaps few can. Here's a great line. This should be read at every meeting. We want to analyze mistakes we have made. If you go to a lot of meetings, you hear people analyze the mistakes other people have made. But we're trying to analyze the mistakes we have made. And notice, it doesn't say the mistakes the alcoholic makes. And if you're new and you're in a relationship, they're going to remind you of all the mistakes you've made for a long time, probably. But they start to get better when they realize the mistakes they made. And the alcoholic starts to get better when they realize the mistakes that he made or she made. So we can see the truth. And that's really the fourth column of the resentment inventory. We want to leave you with the feeling, now this is a line that's quoted a lot, it's powerful. I want to leave you with the feeling that no situation is too difficult and no unhappiness too great to be overcome. It's a great promise in the big book. If you're new, you're struggling, just remember that. No situation is too difficult, no unhappiness is too great to be overcome. And then I added, I'm going to rewrite the big book with God. Because it starts with God, and then it starts with other people and the power of the fellowship, and then it ends with God. So with God, we can handle everything. Remember, we can handle calamity with serenity if we stay close to God and do the work, his work well. We have traveled a rocky road. There's no mistake about that. That's true for everybody involved with alcoholism. We have had a long rendezvous, which means appointment, and you're making an appointment with hurt pride, frustration, self-pity, misunderstanding, and fear. Now, you could say that that's true not only of the wife, but the alcoholic. The alcoholics lived with hurt pride, frustration, self-pity, misunderstanding, and fear. And isn't that true of people who are self-centered and have a spiritual malady? Isn't that how it looks? You don't have to be an alcoholic to have a spiritual malady. Look at TV. Look at the news. And at least we can recognize that we're the problem. And we have a set of kit of tools to help us. It says these are not pleasant companions. Now here's a question. Who makes hurt, pride, frustration, self-pity, misunderstanding, and fear your companion? You do. Good job. Way to go, Michael. And so we have to stop doing that. Now, I wrote something here. I don't know. I've had this book a long time. I write, it is not what happened in my life that was a problem. It's how I reacted to it. And that's really true. I heard that from somebody who wrote it in the book. It's not what happened in my life that was a problem, it's how I reacted to it. Isn't that what you see in the fourth step? You see how you reacted to things that they weren't really problems, they were situations. We have been driven to maudlin sympathy, that self-pity or tearfully sentimental, bitter resentment. Anybody ever have bitter resentment in here? Anybody still have it? Well, go to page 66 and 67 and say those prayers. Some of us have veered, and our bitter resentments were always true, right, when we came in here, right? Did anybody have a resentment when you came in here that was wrong? No, but they're all wrong. That's what we learned. Some of us veered from extreme to extreme, ever hoping that one day our loved ones would be themselves once more. Now, I don't know that, here's what I wrote, do you really want that? So in other words, if alcoholism is a disease of self-centeredness, of course things get better when people stop drinking. But what if they don't have emotional sobriety? Then they're still left with the person who's angry and fearful and upset all the time. So we'd really like them to change and have a emotional sobriety, and we want the same. Our loyalty and the desire that our husbands hold up their heads and be like other men have begotten all sorts of predicament. So I'm going to read these few lines, and this is very similar to page 61, where he describes what it's like for the actor to run the show and how we use all these behaviors to get what we want. So look at what they did. We have been unselfish and self-sacrificing. We have told innumerable lies to protect our pride and our husband's reputation. We have prayed, we have begged, we have been patient. We have struck out viciously, we have run away. We have been hysterical, we have been terror-stricken. We have sought sympathy. We've had retaliatory love affairs with other men. And what is this really? These are behaviors trying to get what you want. You're the actor running the show and you're going to fix that other person. And you want them to be a certain way, and it can be true of the alcoholic or the spouse. We're all trying to run the show, and we have these behaviors to get what we want. And it's the symbol of the spiritual illness. Because really, we have no control over them. And we're not the actor. We're not the director. We're the actor. And so we're trying to direct how it should be, and all we do is get exhausted and upset. And this is where they talk about setting boundaries and not being codependent and trying to practice the spiritual principles in your life no matter how the other person is being, because it just brings out all this these negative emotions and behaviors. Our homes have been battlegrounds many an evening. In the morning we have kissed and made up. Our friends have counseled chucking the men, and we have done so with fidelity, only to be back in a little while, hoping, always hoping. And hoping for what? That's the question. That they'll stop drinking? Well, that's the first thing, right? And then after that, are they going to be, you know, spiritually changed? And so, always hoping, always hoping. And a lot of people stay in bad situations. I know I did that for a long time because I was afraid of changing. And so I stay in the bad changing, always hoping for the good day. Anybody ever had that? You had the good day. It's a good day today. Okay, I don't have to, you know, get divorced and all this. And then it was good, and then the next day it's bad. And then I said, well, I hope tomorrow will be better. But you see how we're always hoping, always hoping. And then once we realize that, you know, the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same, then we make changes. And then our fear of what we were afraid of never really, really comes to grip. Our men have sworn great solemn oaths. Anybody sworn a solemn oath? Anyone sworn a great one? That they were through drinking forever. Did you, anybody say that to yourself? Did you believe it? Now remember, when alcoholics take a great solemn oath to quit alcohol, the FBI calls them in and does a lie detector test, and they pass it 100%. And then 10 minutes later, they're drunk. See, we actually believe it. We believe the great solemn oath, don't we? We all do. But we don't have the power to carry it out. We're not bad people. We don't have the power to carry out what we know we should do. Why? Because at certain times, the alcoholic cannot recall the humiliation and defeat of even a moment ago. We were without defense against the first drink forever. I made the point yesterday that I never have the power to choose not to drink today on my own, ever. The power has to come from God. If I think I have the power to not choose not to drink today, then I'm getting in trouble, right? Because then I'm taking control of my life. But I have to seek the power God can and will if he was sought. So like Ed and other people talk about, we have to seek God all the time, stay close to Him, and get His power to run our lives, and He keeps us from drinking. We seldom had friends that would appear. We came to live almost alone. When we were invited out, our husband sneaked so many drinks that they spoiled the occasion. You ever do that? Did you ever spoil an occasion? If, on the other hand, they took nothing, their self-pity made them killjoys. Anybody ever have self-pity and be unpleasant to be around? It's unpleasant to have self-pity, isn't it? But why we enjoy it for a while, I never understood. It feels good for a while. But then once you get in the program in recovery, it feels really bad. Self-pity is really, really bad. There was never financial security. Positions were always in jeopardy or gone. I love this. An armored car could not have brought the pay envelopes home. The checking account melted like snow in June. Did you spend money that you didn't have? Did you make excuses in your mind that made sense? But sometimes there are other women. How heartbreaking was this discovery? How cruel to be told they understood our men as we did not. Always, we can always justify our behavior to ourselves, but it's not really being truly honest. It's denial, it's rationalization. The bill collectors, the sheriffs, the angry taxi drivers, the policemen, the bums, the pals, even the ladies they sometimes brought home. That must be a scene. Our husbands thought we were so inhospitable. Here's my girlfriend, honey. Why are you upset? Can't you get her coffee? Gee, we're laughing. I'm sure this all happened. Joy killer, net wet blanket. That's what they said. Yeah, we're always complaining how they nag us, right? But look what we did. We can't see the truth. Next day, they would be themselves again. We would forgive and try to forget. We have tried to hold the love of our children. Here's how they try to protect the kids from us and the things that we did. And that's why we have children of alcoholics, right? Isn't that what it's called? Adult children of alcoholics. And they get a lot of value from that fellowship. Perhaps at this point we got a divorce and took the children home to mother father. Now remember, this was written in 1938 when people didn't get divorced. Women didn't work. They were very dependent on the man for a living. It was a different world. And our country was poor when this book was written. We had been coming out of that the depression, but it wasn't till we went to war and we really cranked up that we started to get the economy going. But in 1938, things were not good. So you got divorced, and then your parents criticized you for desertion. Usually we did not leave. We stayed on and on. We finally sought employment ourselves as destitution faced us and our families. They had to go to work. Remember, Bill was sitting home drinking while Lois was working at the department store. We began to ask medical advice as the sprees got closer together, the alarming physical and mental symptoms, the deepening pall of remorse, depression, inferiority that settled down on our loved ones. And that's untreated alcoholism. Anybody experience that at the end? A moment of defeat? And also, the people who love them have remorse, depression, and inferiority. So this is the result of the disease. And that may be the final straw of the spiritual hitting bottom. These things terrified and distracted us. As animals on a treadmill, we have patiently and wearily climbed back, falling back in exhaustion after each futile effort to reach solid ground. And I think alcoholics do that too. We try to get sober, right? We try to straighten out our lives, and it's just exhausting. And they're trying to fix us, and it's a really tough situation. Most of us have entered the final stage with its commitment to health resorts, sanitariums, hospitals, and jails. They didn't have treatment centers in those days. They didn't have some place to ship them off. And remember, the disease wasn't understood in 1938-39. And there wasn't this book. They didn't have this book. They didn't have a solution. Death was often near. Under these conditions, we naturally made mistakes. And you can ask, what was their mistakes? They thought they had some power. They thought they could fix the situation. They thought they had some control over the alcoholic's behavior. And they would get upset at the alcoholic who had no control himself or herself. So you see how it worked? We couldn't control it ourselves. And they wouldn't understand us, and then they would get upset because they couldn't control us. Very, very bad disease. Some of them rose out of ignorance of alcoholism. They didn't understand the problem. The allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, the queer mental twist before the first drink, that there's no, they were not the cause of the alcoholic drinking. Alcoholics drink because they're alcoholics, right? Sometimes we sense dimly that we were dealing with sick men. Had we fully understood the nature of the alcohol illness, we might have behaved differently. And that's what this book has done. And we know it's true today, because if you go to Al-Anon, nobody says, oh, you're going to Al-Anon. They're happy for you. If you're going to AA, they're happy for you. They know you're trying to do something. It's respected. And this book is respected. How could men who love their women and children be so unthinking, so callous and cruel? There could be no love in such persons. Do you think that's true? I wrote they loved alcohol more than them. We loved alcohol, we were dependent on that, but we weren't practicing God's love and tolerance, right? We weren't practicing spiritual principles, we were practicing our character defects. And we could seem unthinking, callous and cruel, couldn't we? We still can. You can be sober and have the same thing if you don't have emotional sobriety. Personality hasn't changed. Just as we were convinced of their heartlessness, they would surprise us with fresh resolves and new attentions. For a while, they would be their old sweet selves, only to dash the new structure of affection to pieces once more. Asked why they commenced to drink it, then they would reply with some silly excuse or none. It was so baffling, so heartbreaking. Could we have been so mistaken in the men we married? When drinking, they were strangers. Sometimes they were so inaccessible that it seemed as though a great wall had been built around them. So who built the wall that made you? And why did you want to be inaccessible? Because then you wouldn't have to listen to the crap. You know, build the wall. And even if they did not love their families, how could they be so blind to themselves? Were you blind to yourself? We couldn't see the truth. We couldn't see our problem. We couldn't see reality. We lived on a lie, like Norm likes to say. We couldn't drink on the truth. Could anybody drink on the truth? No, but we drank on a lie. We said, it's okay, it's not that bad. And once we got the idea of a drink or drug in our head, nothing could get it out of there. You don't want to come between an alcoholic and his drink or drug addict and their drug, right? And so it says, how else was I blind? I could not see the truth about my thinking. We were talking about trust at a couple of meetings. We talked about trust Wednesday and we talked about Thursday. And I was thinking that the thing that I had to learn that I couldn't trust was my thinking. I couldn't trust my reactions to things, especially if they were negative. If I didn't like something, I couldn't trust it. I wasn't spiritually fit. I could see it wrong. I didn't want to react when I was agitated or doubtful, right, John? We want to pause, because when I'm agitated or doubtful, I'm reacting. If I react, I'm reacting in unfit spiritual condition, and then I just get disturbed and screw things up. Would it become their judgment, their common sense, their willpower? Now we have some new people. Why won't willpower work? We're strong-willed. Why won't willpower work and keep you from taking the first drink? Because right before you drink, your mind will tell you only what it's going to do for you, not to you. You get that? It only tells you. And when you can see what it's going to do for you, not to you, you'd have no power over it. Now what's the only thing that can tell you what it's going to do to you and not for you is God. So we have a thing there, think through the first drink. I can't work for me. Or the first drug, I can't think it through. I need to have God. We think it through and we end up in the liquor store, right? Why could they not see the drink meant ruin to them? Pointed out, and then they got, and they realized these dangers, and then got drunk again immediately. A lot of people feel bad when they relapse and come back, but you know, drinking is the normal thing for an alcoholic. How can you get mad at an alcoholic who drinks, who has no power? But what you can get is, you can get frustrated that they won't be willing to surrender and give up and do the deal. Because you have a solution for them, which you want to give them, but they don't want it. And so that gets frustrating. I'll read one more paragraph. These are some of the questions which race through the mind of every woman who has an alcoholic husband. We hope this book has answered them. You know, we talk about the ABCs. We couldn't we're powerless over alcohol, cannot manage our own lives. No human power can relieve it, and God can and will if he sought. And this book describes the description of the alcoholic is from the doctor's opinion up to page 43. And so it changed the way people see us. Perhaps your husband's been living in that strange world of alcoholism where everything is distorted and exaggerated. It's a false world. It's not a real world. The world I created and lived in didn't really exist except in my head. And it made me feel and think and do things that really weren't good for me or others. You could see that he really does love you with his better self. And so ask yourself, what's your worst self? Of course, there is a thing as such as incompatibility, but in nearly every instance, the alcoholic only seems to be unloving and considerate. It is usually because he is warped and sickened that he says and does these appalling things. Today, most of our men are better husbands and fathers than ever before. I hope so. But I think that change in our personality requires working the steps, right? We have to change our personality and become the person God created. It says, try not to condemn your alcoholic husband no matter what he says or does. That's hard. And we condemn each other sometimes in the meetings, you know. We love to gossip. And, well, I shouldn't say that. I never gossip, but Grady sometimes influences me. And we try not to condemn your alcoholic husband no matter what he says or does. All right, stop it. All right, it's not just Grady. All right, I wasn't funny. Leave me alone. He is just another very sick, unreasonable person. We are very sick and very unreasonable. Treat him when you can as though he had pneumonia. When he angers you, remember he is very ill. And then I wrote page 66, 67. We're sick people when we're in our disease. And how can we have love, patience, and tolerance? And let's say you're in a meeting and somebody has untreated alcoholism and you have to say they're not well. How can I be love, patient, and kind? How can I be helpful to them? Look, God save me from being angry. Give me a love and tolerant view. That's how we have to be with each other and the whole world. So I'm going to stop there so we have some time to congratulate the birthdays and discuss. These pages are good, aren't they? Powerful stuff.